You are Locked On Rockets, your daily Houston Rockets podcast, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
The series lives on. At least for one more game. James Harden bounced back from his 3 of 20 showing in Saturday's Game 3 win with 30 points on 50% shooting from behind the arc in Monday's Game 4. Eric Gordon made 5 of his 10 shots from behind the arc. Houston collectively as a team made 17 of 46, 37%, one of their best nights of the series. Chris Paul had 23 points, 8 rebounds, 7 assists. And despite those positives, the Rockets, of course, lost Game 4, 107-91, in large part because certainly the fourth quarter was a disaster, 31-12 in favor of Utah. The Rockets led by 3 going in. But more than that, for the game as a whole, on the glass, they went from a +4 rebounding advantage in Saturday's Game 3 win to -17 in Monday's Game 4 loss. Clint Capela, who we knew to some degree going into the series, was limited by illness. We learned a bit more about that and the virus he's dealing with following the game. Had just 7 boards and only 4 points, 1 of 6 shooting in 28 minutes. Clearly not himself. And when you factor in a very limited Clint Capela against a Jazz squad with Rudy Gobert and Derek Favors in the middle, it's going to be tough to beat any NBA team, let alone a 50-win playoff team in the West, if you have a -17 rebounding differential. And that's why even though the Rockets shot the ball relatively well, again, made 17 threes, Chris Paul, Eric Gordon, James Harden, other than a few too many turnovers, the Rockets had a pretty decent offensive night, but it wasn't close to enough based on the difference in the glass. And that's why the Jazz live on to play Wednesday night's Game 5, and one that, in my opinion, the Rockets have to treat very, very seriously, because with the Warriors seemingly poised to close out their series against the Clippers also in 5 games, well, if Houston does not close it out on their end on Wednesday, then all of a sudden not only does Houston not have home court advantage going up against Golden State in that likely round 2 matchup, both sides, the Rockets and the Warriors, have 3-1 leads in their current round 1 series. Beyond that, the Warriors would be at home and getting to rest, while the Rockets would have to be going to Utah to play what would suddenly become a very stressful Game 6. So there's a lot of incentive for the Rockets to take care of business at home tomorrow night in Game 5. Can they do it, and how? That's what we're going to be discussing today here at Locked On Rockets, your home for daily podcast commentary on everything Houston Rockets basketball. As always, I'm your host, Ben Dubose, Rockets correspondent with Sports Talk 790, the team's official radio flagship in Houston. On today's show, I'm going to be joined momentarily by Roosh Williams. He's part of our rotating series of guest analysts here in the playoffs. We had him on a couple of weeks ago, for those that don't recall. Of course, you can follow him on Twitter, at Roosh Williams. He's a native Houstonian. He's out in Los Angeles these days for law school at USC. And of course, he's a diehard Rockets fan, but has a really good handle on the X's and O's of the game. So in terms of what went wrong for the Rockets in Game 4, certainly we already touched on some of the themes. We'll dive into those a bit more. And also, how can they fix it into what has suddenly become a very pressure-packed Game 5? I know it's at home. I know the Rockets still have a commanding lead in the series, and no NBA team has ever blown a 3-0 lead in a best-of-7. Well, first off, it is going to happen at some point. Hopefully it's not this series, but it's inevitable that it is going to happen, just as it has in other sports. And the Jazz, a 50-win team in the West, they're not going to roll over easy. So we'll talk about what went wrong in Game 4 and also spinning it ahead to Wednesday's Game 5, what is going to be needed for the Rockets to ultimately close out this series the same way they did in Game 5 at home at Toyota Center 1 year ago when the Rockets and Jazz met in the second round. Anyway, let's hit the phone lines and get Roosh Williams connected right here at Locked On Rockets to start breaking it all down. Roosh, good morning. How are you?
Doing all right, man. How you doing?
As well as could be expected. The Rockets still up 3-1, even after a relatively disappointing Game 4 loss. And I want to start with the Clint Capela situation, because when you go from +4 in the glass to -17, and you have just one field goal combined between your two fives, Clint Capela and Kenneth Faried, that's something, the vertical spacing that Mike D'Antoni has discussed a lot in this series against Rudy Gobert and Derek Favors. Look, I want to be clear off the top. I'm not criticizing Clint Capella. If anything, I think we should be praising him because Game 3, dealing with the virus that he's got, to put up 11 points, 14 boards, 2 blocks, this is not the 2017 playoffs when Clint Capella just wasn't physically, mentally tough enough against Steven Adams. He's been playing really well this series. He's gutting it out. He's showing you a ton of toughness. That said, because he's limited by medically what's going on in his body, to go from plus 4 to minus 17, not having any sort of a finishing presence at the rim, it's a problem. So to me, it's one that in the grand scheme, assuming he recovers within a week or so, which is what the doctors apparently told him in Utah, it's something that should resolve itself. However, with Game 5, less than 48 hours after Game 4, it's definitely a cause of concern at the moment because I'm not sure that whatever's going on is going to be all that different 48 hours later. Where do you weigh in on what we saw from Clint last night?
Yeah, I mean, I was initially critical of Clint. I tweeted something to that effect, and then I did not realize that he was still ailing from, you know, I think it's an upper respiratory infection.
Right.
Like you said, game five is less than 48 hours away, so can he get rid of that in time? Who knows? I wouldn't be surprised if he can, to be honest. And then if that is to happen, then I think we might have some issues. Like you said, obviously Capella provides the vertical spacing. And just the fact that someone has to help over from the corner on the lob to Capella while Gobert steps for the floater basically initiates everything within our offense with respect to how we match up against Utah. So, yeah, I don't know. It is concerning. We only got, like you said, one field goal from both of our fives, and who do we turn to next if that's the case, you know?
Yeah, and with Clint, we should mention that perhaps the dry air, the altitude of Utah, that's a complicating factor that won't be there in Houston. He gets to sleep in his own bed. Perhaps that helps a little bit with having him gut it out. But at the end of the day, if he's not right, then all the advantages we've talked about in this matchup, if the Jazz have Gobert in Favors and you have a limited Clint Capella and Kenneth Faried as your backup five, that's a problem. And I'm just curious what you think Mike D'Antoni does. In the fourth quarter last night, we saw the tuck wagon lineup when Capella obviously wasn't right. The first couple of minutes, it went fine, but ultimately it was a big rebounding problem. The other card that they have not played yet is Nene. Just curious that if Clint is limited and Mike D'Antoni, the Rocket staff, I'm guessing they'll have at least a pretty good idea what shape he's in by tip-off Wednesday night. Do you think that the most plausible way, if Capella can only play like 20, 25 minutes and is limited, do you think you'll see more tuck wagon? Or is this a game maybe where you break the glass and see what Nene has, and maybe a 36-year-old Nene can do against Gobert or what a 34-year-old Nene did against Steven Adams 2 years ago?
Yeah, I think if Clint is limited, I think Nene is an option. I wouldn't say – I think what you're going to get from Nene is we're either going to see some spot minutes, you know, 5, 7 minutes, something like that, or we get a Nene game type of thing where he just puts it all out there. You know, he's hitting his little mid-range shots. He's rolling with force and not being intimidated by Gobert, and he's finishing at the rim and holding down the boards, you know, for ideally, if we do need him, maybe 12 to 15 minutes. If that's not the case, though, I was also going to say all the problems that you just listed, you know, keep in mind, or I guess I want Rockets fans to keep in mind that, I mean, the game was within reach, you know. We were up by 3 going into the fourth quarter on the road. I felt like Harden still really wasn't getting a whistle. I don't think last night the refs were as bad as they were in game 3, but, I mean, the game was for the taking. And I think if Capella's out, it's going to come down to do we hit our threes. Going into the fourth quarter, we were 17 of 32 from 3. And when I noticed that was the case and that we were also only up by 3, I figured that might be a problem because, you know, I figured we'd regress to the mean. But, another thing I was going to say is I feel like Faried is the kind of player that can feed off of a home crowd. You know, he's looked pretty lost on defense at times, and he's in some ways looked kind of unplayable at certain points against Utah, at least. But he is the kind of guy I think that, you know, he could explode. He could provide that vertical spacing, because if Capella's not going to be available, you know, for the lob, then Faried's really all we got. And I don't think we can – I mean, we can beat Utah at least one more time without a vertical threat, but I'd at least like to see us go for it still.
Remember to get this show every day. Subscribe to Locked On Rockets on the new Himalaya podcast app. In this ever-expanding podcast world, you need Himalaya with their personally curated playlist and new features each and every day. Download Himalaya at your app store and subscribe to Locked On Rockets. All right, now continuing our recap of the Game 4 107-91 loss the Rockets suffered Monday night in Salt Lake City, Utah. I'm Ben DuBose, your normal host here at Locked On Rockets, joined by guest analyst Roosh Williams. You can follow us on Twitter. Our handles are pretty simple, simply our names, at Ben DuBose, at Roosh Williams. We spent the first segment of our usual 3 points recap largely discussing the rebounding issues, going from plus 4 in game 3 to minus 17 in game 4. And a lot of that had to do with Clint Capela being limited by illness. Can he get better by game 5? And if not, what can they do? Nene, Kenneth Faried, more tuck wagon lineups, which they tried for a bit in the fourth quarter, but make sure even smaller in terms of the rebounding. That's what we discussed a lot in segment one. I'm sure we'll touch on it a few more times before we close out the show. But to start off segment two, I want to look at what else went wrong offensively. Houston scored just 12 points in the fourth quarter. And Roosh, when you were discussing the Faried angle and Capela, you mentioned that going into the fourth, and I'm right there with you, the Rockets were 17 of 32 from behind the arc and only up 3, and that was just an unsustainable number. They missed all their threes in the fourth, and that's how you ended up with a 12-point fourth quarter and the Jazz rallying to win it by 19 and ultimately the game by 16. What do you think, aside from the obvious of Capela being more springy, is the answer to getting Houston's offense more diverse? Because what seems pretty clear in Utah, Gobert has completely taken away the floater game from James Harden. He is coming out so far, and perhaps you can see Harden pulling up from the mid-range game more, 12, 14 feet away. That's one solution. Obviously, Chris Paul has some mid-range game in his arsenal. Just curious how you diversify your offense if you run into a game 5 in which maybe you're not making your threes, which we certainly saw what happened in the fourth quarter of game 4 when those finally rimmed out. So what's the key, aside from Capela and Faried, to diversifying the offense?
Well, first and foremost, I think we just need production from the bench. I believe they were 2 of 16 combined for 5 points.
Yep.
Prior to that, in the first 3 games, I think we were averaging about 31 points off the bench. I think we got 35, 30, and 29 from the bench in those first 3 games, albeit some of that may have been in garbage time, but the point is that, you know, we're getting production off the bench when we needed it. We need something from Daniel House. Unfortunately, he was 0-6 last night. He's only shooting 29% for the series from the field, and I think he's shooting around 21% from three, which obviously does not bode well for us. And then tactically, yeah, I mean, you're right. Gobert's taken the floater away. I do want to point out that, and maybe I'm being nitpicky here, but I feel like the same rule that goes into effect on the perimeter when you shoot a three and you have a defender landing in your landing space,
yep,
like, it does not apply to the floater for whatever reason. Maybe that's in the rules, but I just want to point that out because it just seems like Harden is getting, you know, crashed into when he leaves his feet. But regardless, like you said, I think pulling up from mid-range, I don't know if you recall seeing it in the fourth quarter. At one point, Chris Paul he got past Rubio and he used his butt to seal Rubio off, and then he went up for the shot, and he got a foul call. Mm-hmm. I thought it was a bad call because I thought he kind of sold the contact. But the point is, James Harden's much bigger, much stronger, and if he can get Rubio on his hip and seal him off from mid-range, then I think he has a similar option, right? You either pull up from around the free throw line or just in front of it, or you have Ricky Rubio run into you, and you get, you know, easy points at the free throw line that way. And another wrinkle I want to see us throw in there, I saw this a little bit, I think it was in game 3, maybe 2, but I think it was game 3, where Utah is used to seeing James Harden penetrate, and then he either goes for the floater, or we kick it out for 3, or we go for the lob. It's kind of like, you know, those are the 3 options that we have.
Right.
But we added this wrinkle where Rivers, or whoever was in the corner, I think it was Austin Rivers, was crashing to the basket from the corner as soon as, you know, without a delay, as soon as James got into the middle of the paint, of the lane, we had someone crashing. And I'd like to see more of that from different angles, whether it's the corner man, whether it's the person on the wing, for someone like Daniel House specifically, who's had trouble getting going, can get vertical, you know, and finish off a catch and dunk or catch and layup or whatever it is. I think we need to start utilizing that because otherwise when we go into the lulls, we just get kind of stagnant and it feels like Utah's dictating what's going on. Yeah, I just think we need to figure out a way to kind of keep them scrambled instead of just kind of feeding into what they're setting up for us.
I'm right there with you, by the way, on Harden getting knocked to the floor on his drive and them not calling that. And that's doubly problematic because not only is it not a foul and it doesn't send Harden to the free throw line, it also many times ends up with Harden on the ground and the other team getting a 5-on-4 in transition. So many times you have a 4 or 5 point swing based on that. So I think it not only is an offensive issue, the Rockets not getting that call, and maybe they'll get a friendlier whistle in game 5 at home, but also it leads to some of the defensive problems in transition as well. The other thing with Harden I want to touch on is his turnovers. He had 8 last night. He had 8 in game 2. I wasn't too concerned about it because some of them came the fourth quarter. They all seemed to collectively run out of gas. Also, a couple of them came because Capella didn't have anywhere near the lift that he had when he, I don't know, it wasn't like he didn't have the virus in game 3, but I think perhaps the altitude, the dry air, that contributed to where there's just an emptying of the tank effect. He didn't have nearly the same in game 4. I'm not going to say that the turnovers from Harden were just a non-story, but ultimately for the game, Houston had 15 turnovers, Utah 14. I'm not that concerned about it. As far as James went, he made the threes in game 4 that he missed in game 3, and there's stuff to clean up. But aside from the tactical things that we just discussed, I don't think his decision-making was really that poor. Is that a fair characterization of it, or how do you look at the turnovers?
I think as far as the turnovers go, I guess I'll separate the turnovers from his decision-making.
Okay.
As far as the turnovers go, I don't think it was, as far as game 2 goes, you know, I think a lot of those turnovers came once we had a huge lead, and, you know, he was just kind of trying things like throwing, you know, full court passes to Capella or whatever, sure, whatever it may be when he gets fancy. Last night, I think it was more so just a couple instances that stood out, like that one in the fourth quarter where, you know, he lost the ball and then him and Eric Gordon miscommunicated. And I think it was Donovan Mitchell picked it up and took it coast to coast. What I'd like to see him do a little more is he gets trapped. So Utah was sending like a delayed double team.
Mm-hmm.
And there was one point, I think, where Harden gets trapped kind of in the corner, kind of on the wing by the three-point line. And he gets in that position where, you know, you're pivoting with the ball and you're double teamed and he's trying to split the double team. And then he steps on the out-of-bound line behind him. And he's starting to do that more frequently.
Mm-hmm.
And I just wish, I guess I'm not concerned about the turnovers overall, but I just wish in spot moments when, you know, there's like a pivotal momentum swing or where we need a big bucket, I just wish he'd be a little more aware. But overall, I think it's been fine. And then as far as his decision-making goes, he looked a little hesitant, in my opinion, when he got into the middle. And I think that's just a result of the fact that Gobert is, you know, he's taking the floater away, and
yep,
I don't think Harden expected to be so shooting so poorly with the floater. And obviously, if Clint doesn't have his usual springs, then that kind of foils what we do when we get into the middle. So I'm not too worried about Harden. He's honestly, and I'm one of the guys on Twitter that will plead him to take the mid-range more.
Mm.
Last night, once we got rolling in the third quarter, I was kind of upset that he wasn't stepping back more. I mean, we got into the bonus with like 8 minutes left in the third quarter. We had the whole quarter to take advantage. And it felt like we were about to get that separation. But every time we hit a big three, we let Utah come back. And then Harden took his foot off the gas. He was 6 of 10 from three at one point. And I was, you know, he was in a rhythm. He was hitting. There was one play where he lost the ball and picked it back up and hit a fadeaway three. And I just wish he was going to be more aggressive. So hopefully he does that at home.
Yeah, absolutely. And the way I look at game 3 and game 4, if you combine what Harden did in game 4, 6 of 12 from behind the 3-point arc, with game 3, when the Rockets had a much more balanced effort overall, the bench, Capella was much springier, as we discussed earlier, they probably win game 3 by 15 points. And even if, say, you get 3 of 20 Harden in game 4, well, look, if you have a fairly commanding win in game 3 and then you lose by 20, 25 in a game 4, I think we'd be looking at this very differently. I just think at some root level, when you look at how these two games came to be and neither of them was all that commanding, it feels like two consecutive uninspiring performances. And so that's why, to me, I think even though the Rockets are up 3-1, there's a bit more unease with the fan base because it feels like there's been two straight games in which the collective efforts haven't been where they need to be. The upside is that with Harden, really, if his shot is fixed and he shot 6 of 12 from 3 last night, then that increases your margin of error on these other fronts so much more. And hopefully playing at home, not just for James, everybody else, will give them an extra jolt and perhaps not let the Jazz feed off the crowd in the same way that certainly they have the last two games. Roosh, I want to ask you about the defensive end of the floor. Last night, the Jazz, 11 of 35, that was actually one of their better three-point shooting games of the series. And from Houston's standpoint, it's been so confounding to me to figure out these open threes that Utah have gotten, how much is poor defense and how much is by design? Because certainly Ricky Rubio, 1 of 7, they're leaving bad shooters open. But at the same time, when you have guys that even are above 30%, if there's no one within 10 feet of them, then it's a problem. And there's lots of ways you can look at it. You can say it's bad defense. You can say it's spotty communication. You can point out that in game 1 and game 2, the Rockets had big leads, so maybe there was complacency. There's also, as Matt Moore, a.k.a. HP Basketball on Twitter, pointed out yesterday, because you're trying to disrupt the lob game with Gobert and Favors, perhaps some of this is by design. Just curious, with the Warriors likely looming next, in terms of the Jazz open looks from three, which, to the Rockets' credit, I thought that declined a little bit last night. How much of it is by design, and how much of it is something that you're concerned by fundamentally?
I'd say 50-50 at this point. I'm starting to think that it might just be by design to some extent, not all the time. Because if you see some of the times where maybe Crowder will get the ball or whoever it is, Rubio, we're just not even closing out. And it's almost kind of like, we're daring them to shoot. But what is concerning to me is that the Jazz, at times, they will front load, like the strong side of the court. One wing of the floor, they'll have the ball in the corner. And so they have a shooter in the opposite corner, and whoever's guarding that shooter, sometimes it's Harden, will typically gravitate towards the middle, obviously because Gobert is there, like you alluded to. I guess Matt Moore said something about this.
Mm-hmm.
And so what the Jazz are doing is they're underrated passers. They're pretty good passers. They're not like Chris Paul off-the-dribble type passers necessarily, but they're making good skip passes, and then we're not closing out. And so you'll see Royce O'Neal, wide open in the corner or wide open from the wing. And that is an issue. I think against Golden State, you see less of that Gobert type of presence,
right,
that is looming in the middle. And obviously, I think I would hope that we have a ton more respect for Golden State shooters than we do for Utah's. And so will it carry over to the next series? I hope not, assuming we make it there. But it is concerning for this series. I also want to say, to that effect of their shooters, I feel like Joe Ingles has been kind of played out of this series, despite being one of their better shooters. Last night, he only logged 22 or 23 minutes, and it seemed like they played their best with him off the floor. So I guess I just wanted to point out that they're not even getting shots or made three-pointers from their best shooters, from their Corvers and from their Joe Ingles.
Mm-hmm.
They're getting it from, guys like Niang and Royce O'Neal.
Yeah.
And I guess Royce O'Neal shot, I think, maybe 39% for the season. But, with increased volume, he's starting to make a difference against us. So
yep,
something to look out for.
As far as Ingles, just 4 field goal attempts overall last night in 23 minutes. He's become a non-factor. Donovan Mitchell led the way, 31 points, his most efficient game of the series, 11 of 26. And last defensive question for you, Roosh. Are we at a point now where Eric Gordon's minutes need to track Donovan Mitchell's in terms of when he sits? Because to me, the difference is striking when Mitchell goes up against anyone that's not Eric Gordon. I think back to early in the fourth quarter, for example, when the Rockets or when the Jazz pushed that lead, Rockets entered up by 3, and before you knew it, then Utah went on the 15-1 run. There just seems to be such a big drop-off from when Gordon defends Mitchell to when anybody else. And with the Rockets trying to close out this game, there's going to be so much pressure in Game 5. Are you at a point now where you're almost using Gordon as your Mitchell stopper and trying to line up those minutes?
I guess so, because last night I don't think Austin Rivers did that good of a job.
Nope.
On him. I know Rivers has the quick twitch ability, but, I mean, he was fouling him. He made some pretty low IQ fouls when he was off the ball.
Yep.
He'd reach over and slap when Mitchell was driving for no reason. I think Eric Gordon's been our best bet. I think that Chris Paul can guard him, but I guess we're not going to go there in terms of not, like, overexerting CP3. I'm surprised that the Rockets haven't tried Shump. And I think that maybe for Game 5, if you have spot minutes, if Gerald Green's 3 is not falling, or if Austin Rivers is, hesitant or kind of playing like he did in Game 4, give Shump, 6 or 7 minutes, see what happens, see if he can stick him. But honestly, as far as defending Utah goes, I don't even think Donovan Mitchell's been the main problem, at least as far as last night, because that's the only game we lost so far. I think that the way the Rockets defended Rubio was very stunning. We gave him lanes, and we treated him like someone who can pull up and shoot, and we treated him like a much better offensive player than he is.
Yep.
Which I did not understand. I don't think as far as like reading the scouting report, I don't know what happened with Rubio, but all you have to do with Rubio is go under the screen, you move your feet, and you dare him to pull up and shoot, because he doesn't like to. And even when he does, he doesn't get a lot of elevation on his shot, so it's not difficult to contest. And when he drives, unless he has a wide open layup, he's not going to take the layup typically. And even if he does, last night it seemed like he was getting whatever he wanted, right? But he was 6 of 17 from the floor, and that was his best game. I mean, he was 6 of 17 from the floor, and he had wide open lanes. So just imagine if you put a body in front of him, move your feet, and funnel him to the baseline. I really think that's all you have to do with Rubio, and then you have to count on your off-ball defenders to not ball watch, because once Rubio hits the baseline, then you have the guys on the wing collapsing and crashing towards the middle, because our off-ball defenders were ball watching. So I just didn't understand why we treated Rubio like some kind of premier perimeter player instead of just a kind of a game managing ball handler, you know?
Final thoughts here on our Tuesday show with Roosh Williams. I'm your host, Ben Dubose. We're simultaneously breaking down the 107-91 loss in Game 4 and looking ahead to Game 5, the second closeout opportunity for the Rockets in this series, which they still lead 3-1. The Warriors also lead the Clippers 3-1, and of course they loom as your likely Round 2 opponent, assuming the Rockets can close this out. Roosh, I want to get your take on how much urgency there is to Game 5, because to me, it's pretty substantial. It's a game that the Rockets, they are going to have a lot of pressure on them, and perhaps that's a good thing. We'll see how they respond to the moment, the stage, that kind of thing. Because to me, first off, if this thing goes back to Utah for a Game 6, they've played a lot better at home. All of a sudden, I don't care that it was 3-0. If it's 3-2, this is a series. You are no longer, I know that no one has ever overcome an 0-3 deficit in NBA history, but it's going to happen at some point. The Jazz are a 50-win team in the West. They've done a lot this season. This is not a laughingstock by any means. If they get within 3-2 going back home, all of a sudden you have to be at least open to the possibility that, yeah, something crazy could happen. That's a good team. And at that point, it doesn't matter that it's 3 or that it was 3-0. At that point, it's 3-2, and it's all about them just having to win two games. Beyond that, though, even if you want to say, look, the Rockets, at some point over four games, they're going to be hot from three and the Jazz cold, something like that, I really don't think Utah's going to win the series, but considering that the Warriors appear poised to end their series in five games, to me, even if you ultimately close it out in Game 6 or Game 7, if you're having to play games, especially with Clint Capella's illness and needing to get him some time to heal up and get right medically, if you're having to play games into the weekend while the Warriors are sitting at home, getting all this rest, and then they'll open the series with home court advantage, the first two games in Oakland as well, to me, if it goes to 6 or 7, even if you ultimately beat the Jazz, the odds are you're probably costing yourself any realistic chance to take down the Warriors, which is the entire point in round two. So to me, I look at it, tomorrow's a big opportunity. If the Rockets win that game, then really it's not all that different than if they'd closed it out in game four and everything is fine. On the other hand, if they lose it, then all of a sudden you're in a really, really bad spot. So to me, I know they're up 3-1, but the Rockets almost have to approach this game tomorrow like it's an elimination game and that the pressure is on them. Is that fair?
I agree 100%. I don't want to go back to Utah at all. I will say, I think Rockets fans, I didn't stick around on Twitter last night, so I don't know what the collective sentiment was, but if anyone is, you know, freaking out or whatever, I would remind Rockets fans that going into Utah and winning back-to-back games is very difficult.
Yep.
And last year, it required Chris Paul going psycho for that to happen. So on one hand, absolutely, we can't afford to go back to Utah for the purposes of rest, for the purposes of just the psychological edge that the Jazz will have at that point, having won two games and going back home. I don't think we want to deal, I don't think anyone wants to see that other than Utah fans and Golden State fans. So I would pull out all the stops if I was D'Antoni, and I would just make it happen in game five. But at the same time, I think that this Rockets team, honestly, I don't think they expected to lose last night. And I feel like once we made that third quarter push and we took the lead, I took a deep breath and sat back and I thought, okay, here we go. Third quarter against Minnesota last year. Like, we're about to turn it on. and I feel like the team felt the same way. And obviously that's not how things turned out. So I think they're going to play with a sense of pride. And one thing that does give me confidence in our abilities to perform is the fact that I know Chris Paul is probably very angry about last night.
Yep.
And when you say Chris Paul has no interest in losing this game, I think we're going to see that version of him, hopefully. I do want to point out that he's shooting, I think it's 5 of 24 from 3 for the series, and that's kind of concerning. But yeah, it really all is contingent on Capella's health. if Clint Capella's healthy, I think moving forward we'll be okay. If he's not, then you know we might have a longer series than we hoped for, but hopefully not.
Fair take, folks. He's Roosh Williams. You can follow him on Twitter at Roosh Williams, simply his name. Roosh, thanks so much for the time, and look forward to having you back again.
Hey, likewise, man. Thank you. Go Rockets.
Good stuff there with Roosh, and that should do it for our show on this Tuesday, April 23rd. As always, I appreciate you guys so much for tuning in, and if you want more content before our next episode, breaking down Game 5, the best place to get it is on Twitter. Roosh is on there at Roosh Williams, I am on there at Ben Dubose, and the show is on there at Locked on Rockets. Beyond Twitter, we've got a Facebook account at facebook.com/LockedOnRockets, a website, LockedOnRockets.com, an email address, LockedOnRockets@gmail.com. All of those are ways that you can interact with me. You can check out prior episodes. You can ask me questions about the team, make suggestions for the show, advertising inquiries, anything we can do to make this a better podcast for you, the diehard Rockets fan, or even you, the human being. Please don't hesitate to reach out and let me know what I can do. Also, please not only listen, but subscribe if you can. That's how you get episodes delivered right to your inbox, even before I can post them on Twitter. And hopefully you can go a step beyond subscribing and leave a 5-star review so that we can look attractive to potential advertisers and keep the business model rolling here at Locked on Rockets as the only daily podcast covering Houston Rockets basketball. Also remember, as far as subscribing, you can do so on the new Himalaya podcast app, as well as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, and more. And remember that when you get in your car, you can even find our most recent episode that way by telling your smart device to play podcast Locked on Rockets. So with the plugs complete, this is where we will break. One last message I do want to throw out there. If you're in Houston and you're going to go to Game 5 on Wednesday night, I hope to see you out there. Beyond that, though, please get there early. It's going to be a madhouse, the usual weekday rush hour traffic considerations. The two starts last week were at 8:30 p.m. Tomorrow night, Wednesday, April 24th, it's a 7 p.m. start because it's the front end of a doubleheader. The aforementioned Warriors-Clippers game is on the back end of it. So earlier start time, and not only that, the Astros are playing the Twins that night at Minute Maid Park, just a few blocks away. Bernie Sanders is having a presidential rally at Discovery Green, which is even closer, practically across the street from Toyota Center. Parking's going to be at a premium. There's a lot of traffic considerations that aren't there for 8:30 games. So take some extra precautions, get there early, because this is a game, the Rockets, if they lose Game 5, and it's going back to Salt Lake City, where Utah has had two consecutive games playing really well, and all of a sudden they will be fueled by the adrenaline of potentially becoming the first team to ever come back from down 3-0 in a playoff series. Yeah, if it gets to Game 6 in Salt Lake City, the problem is, number one, you're going to be facing a ton of pressure. And secondly, even if you do win a Game 6 or Game 7, and ultimately you don't completely collapse, well, you're still probably costing yourself the end goal anyway, which is an NBA championship. Because if the Warriors close out their series in 5 and are waiting and resting in Oakland while you're having a battle with the Utah Jazz, that could have effects well beyond just round 1, especially with Clint Capella limited by the virus. So there's a lot of incentive for the Rockets to close this out in Game 5. I think there's a good chance that they do. But the Rockets, they need their fans in seats. They need you guys loud. And so if you want to help, to me, this is a rare situation where you legitimately can. Because just as the Jazz fed off the crowd in Game 3, and especially Monday's Game 4 win, well, the Rockets did that in Game 1 and Game 2, and they should have an opportunity to do that again in Wednesday's Game 5. So beyond just attending, which it's a playoff game, it's a chance to close out a series, that should be a lot of fun. That should be enough incentive. Beyond that, though, if you would like to make a difference, do whatever it takes to try and make sure you're there on time, allow extra time for parking, traffic, all that kind of stuff, and be there from the jump, because this is one that, in my opinion, if the Rockets win Wednesday's Game 5, it's really not that different than closing it out in 4. Everything is fine. You're still on course. You'll get at least 3 days off before playing the Warriors. My guess is that Game 1 would be Sunday afternoon at 2:30 from Oracle. Everything's fine. If you lose Game 5, yeah, there's definitely some pretty substantial negatives to that scenario, so hopefully that's not a road that we're going to have to go down. Whatever the case, though, whether it's optimistic and they close it out, or it's pessimistic because somehow they blow it at home, you'll next hear from me on the podcast late Wednesday night, breaking down whatever happens in Game 5 as the Rockets get their second chance to close out the Utah Jazz in this Round 1 series. In the meantime, get some rest, get rejuvenated, and then come back right here at Locked On Rockets following the game tomorrow night, where we'll be breaking it all down as your only home for daily podcast commentary on everything Houston Rockets basketball. For now, enjoy the rest of your day, and please come back soon for more episodes.